banda rebelde. En la banda rebelde que cantaré porque somos chicanos.
My name is Lia Rose Gallegos. I play quijada, vocals, and dance zapateado.
Hi, I'm Denise Carlos. I do vocals, I do zapateado, and I play the jarana primera.
My name's Hector Flores. I dance zapateado. I play the jarana tercera. I also sing and do a little bit of poetry and spoken word as the MC.
What's up, everybody? My name's David Flores. I play the requinto jarocho.
Hello, hello. My name is Jose Cano. I play cajon, I play flute, and I play requinto in the band.
Hi, my name is Daniel. I play the jarana segunda. I sing and I also MC.
Tell me about what the name of your collective is and how you got started together.
So we're a seven-piece musical collective that we began basically in 2005 out of an environmental justice struggle in South Central Los Angeles. There was this struggle to keep this communal land called the South Central Farm, the largest urban farm in the United States. And out of that struggle, a lot of folks came together. And any given night, you'd find poetry, spoken word, danza azteca, and son jarocho. And that's the first time many of us we met. That's where the first time many of us heard son jarocho. And son jarocho, as this traditional Afro-Mexican art form, became the soundtrack for that movement. And many of us were inspired to tell our stories and learn this traditional art form and keep it going even after the struggle of the South Central Farm.
Son jarocho music comes from southern Veracruz, Mexico, in the Gulf Coast. It is hundreds of years old and comes out of this context of colonization, which the Spanish, when they started colonizing Mexico, came through and started. Their main entry point into Mexico was Veracruz. So in that time, there was a mix of African peoples, of course, Spanish, Arab, and indigenous peoples, including the Olmecs and other peoples, who mixed up in this sort of process of colonization. And out of that sort of the mix of slavery and oppression also came this beautiful music. And this mixing brought out all these elements that include, you know, these sort of African rhythms and elements like call and response, using of a donkey jawbone as a percussive, sort of like a huida, like in cumbia, taking the materials around them and making the instruments that they knew how to make, and making this beautiful song. Son jarocho is made famous by La Bamba. Everybody has heard the song La Bamba. Richie Valens popularized it around the world in the 50s. And so for us, son jarocho is really a way to, I think, connect with our roots and a platform to tell our stories through. Son jarocho is really centered around improvisation. So you have people playing it all night, 12 hours maybe, in a jam session called the Fandango. And they'll be improvising verses across the room about, in La Bamba, talking about, you know, how cute this girl is and I want to dance with you, or like how funny dude's shirt is, or, you know, like, I love this area that I'm from and you should, you know, respect it.
So your music obviously has a very strong social justice focus. I'm wondering what your journey has been as as activists, if you would all classify yourself that way. And I'm also wondering if you've always been musicians.
Some of us did grow up playing music. A lot of us didn't. So I, for example, grew up playing soccer. And as soon as what's really cool is that as soon as soccer ended, son jarocho came into my life. So it was a really beautiful transition to leave this passionate place that I was experiencing and enter a new space.
Those spaces sound completely different. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, what's good is that I have coordinated legs from soccer, so it was easy for me to learn the dance of son jarocho, the zapateado. And so like me, many of us grew up doing different things. Denise grew up doing folklorico. Hector and David grew up baseball. And so it wasn't until later in our life that we were introduced to son jarocho, which led to us evolving into Las Cafeteras.
This is Hector Flores. As members of Las Cafeteras, we also met in very different places. So many of us met in the struggle for the South Central Farm. Myself and Denise, we met doing Zapatista-inspired organizing, taking trips to Chiapas and doing work in Los Angeles around Zapatista spaces. I met Jose Cano at a rally against budget cuts in Cal State LA. And then, you know, and I have my brother in the group and my aunt. So, but all of us convened at this autonomous Zapatista community center called the Eastside Cafe, which is in Northeast Los Angeles. And that's where we started taking classes. And that's where we cultivated our relationship, you know, solidified our sort of our friendship, but also about what we want to make and manifest with music. And so because we came in already as organizers, artivists, and activists, Son Jarocho allowed us, and like Daniel said, gave us a platform to insert our stories, right? So use the tradition to tell our modern day stories to sort of manifest what we want to see in the future, right? So it's all kind of that lineage. And it was really through social justice work where we came together, and now we're just manifesting that through Son Jarocho inspired music, because in many ways we moved away from the traditional, and now we're doing this fusion because that more is more reflective of who we are as people and as a city in Los Angeles.
You've put your own stamp on it, really.
Oh yeah, big time. We need a stamp.
Does anyone else want
to ask? There's a running joke like around a lot of the of how we play, where in Southern Veracruz the music came from like the countryside and the ranches, and there's a song, it's called La Guacamaya, and La Guacamaya is about a beautiful, beautiful bird that we were singing for years, but we've never seen a guacamaya. And so in LA, right? And that's where we play, in the urban cities. And so we always have this running joke that like we don't see the bird as a guacamaya. We see the ghetto bird that's in our streets, right? And so we needed to tell the stories that we hear from our neighborhoods and our communities and how that is relevant to our worldview.
Who wants to talk about some of the stories that you're hearing in your communities and your neighborhood that is really inspiring your music?
This is Denise. I think, you know, it's not necessarily that we hear them from our neighborhoods. It's that we've lived them. A lot of the song, well, you know, a lot of the messages that we have in our songs do focus around immigration. And I think the majority of us are children of immigrants. And so for us to be able to talk about that story and have connections with our community and folks that are in the Dreamer struggle, you know, although we may not be undocumented and we may not have traveled those roads and those deserts ourselves, it's definitely something that hits home. And we carry that, you know, the trauma, we carry I would say the sorrow that we've lived that with our parents, and also the how we've achieved and used that as a way to empower ourselves and say, we're gonna shift that. Our path is gonna be different, and we're going to have a message about immigration in a way that's empowered rather than silenced. And so that we're able to do that, I think, as first generation here in the United States, or as folks that have gone to universities and are able to use different languages in different spaces, it's a very powerful way, right? But a lot of times the only way that we can actually connect around issues like these and political issues is with music. Because although you may not understand certain issues or have lived them, the music speaks to your spirit.
You've talked about really using music to share your own narrative, and I think maybe it was you, Denise, who said, my story is your story, and we are all connected, you are using music to sort of shift the narrative, it sounds like. So if people would be willing, I hate to ask you to do this in such a short amount of time, but to give us a snippet of your own narrative about where you've been and how this is helping you to shift your world in some way.
Hi, my name is David Flores again. I think something really within our stories and what we've grown up as Chicanos in East LA and, you know, trying to raise a consciousness, right? I think our identities have always been challenged, and we've always had to challenge our own identities. And so what's really dope about the work that we do and really the way that we engage with young folks is that we encourage folks to not be against the world, but really, as the Zapatistas say, is to create the world that they want to see, right? So, for example, our CD is called It's Time, right? And we purposely named it It's Time and not said It's Time or not identified what it was time for, but we really think folks need to reflect and kind of look within to see what it's time for within themselves. There's a lot of anger in the world. There's a lot of hate in the world. And so we're really trying to shift that narrative and to not be against everything so much, but really encouraging folks to create that world, which they want to see.
Hi, I'm Daniel. One of the things that I think is really fun about what we do is that I feel like we make protest a party, you know, and we make having dreams and working for your dreams a party. You know what I'm saying? So it's fun and it's beautiful to dance and have a good time and not forget about the world, but celebrate all the good work that's happening in it. All of the people around the world, around California, who are pushing grander visions of who we can be as people and as a state and as communities, and actualizing our dreams. The time is now, you know, like whatever, if you're listening to this, go do what you're supposed to do in the world. Go do your passion, make the world beautiful.
And when was it that you all collectively decided, like, together, we're going to use music and we are going to change the world using that medium along with our stories?
I think it was kind of interesting because all of us were involved in different things, as was mentioned before. And so I think, like, when we started playing music together, our personalities and our interests and our passions, like, naturally just kind of came out and manifested themselves in the music. I think music is really, you know, it's a fun thing to play, it's a fun thing to share, and but more than that, it's kind of like the way we talk about storytelling and telling the things that are important to our experience and our history and our people, our communities. I think just it's just the most natural thing for us to be able to express these things, because in demonstrations and in political spaces and in community spaces, there's so many things that we talk about, like wanting to say, and through the music is such a it's such a really powerful and accessible way to be able to communicate these things that are so important to us. Our personalities drive it, and they just manifest itself through the music. And so it's really, really cool to be able to communicate these things through the music and have fun, like Daniel said, and yeah, and take it wherever we go.
This is Hector. And when I first started playing this music, I wanted to learn all the political Son Jarocho songs, all the ones that talked about struggle and resistance, right? Along with learning the traditional stuff, because that's where I came from. I was an organizer really thinking about how to utilize music in a way that's going to tell stories, right? That are going to connect with the young people I'm working with. And when people ask me, you know, now that we've been playing music for years, people say, oh, who are your biggest musical influences? I say, Malcolm X, Gandhi, you know, it's not really the musical influences that have really influenced my playing or my poetry. It's really been folks who have worked towards peace and equality. Those are the musical influences in my life. You know, Dolores Huerta, you got Chavi, you got Lucy Parsons, you know, you got the Ricardo Flores Magón brothers. And so those are the folks who have influenced me, you know. And then as a band, everybody comes in with their own heroes, sheroes, folks who have influenced them, some musical, some not. And that's really helped shape sort of the direction of the band. And we don't necessarily have like an end goal. What we want to do is we love being part of this journey, which I think has been unpaved, you know, for our people and for this type of music. And so we're just excited. If it ended tomorrow, we'd be blessed that we got even this far as a musical group and being able to spread a message.
And Hector, I really appreciate your framing of that, because I think a lot of young people and people in general are starting to become a little bit apathetic, and they'll say, well, you know what, we can make a change with this habit, but we can't compete with Monsanto or with the government around undocumented policy and that kind of thing. So some people are tempted to say, well, screw it, I won't do anything. That was a really nice framing of it.
This is Jose. I wanted to say something about a friend of mine who just started substitute teaching in Inglewood, in LA. And he talks about how difficult it is to be a teacher, to be a substitute teacher, and how much stress it causes him. And so we run into a lot of teachers who say they're inspired by the work that we do and about the songs that we play. And I mean, at the same time, I want to tell them, yo, like, we do the easy work, you know. Your work being there on the front lines, working with folks every day, working with youth every day, is really hard, really challenging work. So I'm really inspired by your dedication to continue to do that work. So it's mutually inspiring. We mutually feed each other's soul by doing that stuff.
I wanted somebody to tell me about your process in terms of how you come up with your content.
I think rather than the process of us hearing other people's stories and making them a song, it's really looking in within and looking into our own memories and the connections that we've made and how that has impacted our lives. When we think of when was it that we decided to come together and sing about XYZ, it's not so much that. You know, it wasn't a decision that this is what we're going to do with the music. It happened naturally. We always say we didn't find Son Jarocho found us. And so I think we've come to an understanding that there's some meaning in the universe for us to have come together and have been able to create this magic with this music. And I think for some reason or in some way, it's almost healing for us as well. I know one of the things I'm very passionate about is identifying, you know, very strongly and very proudly as a woman and a feminist. And I think very simply, I didn't have female role models in terms of musicians really growing up. There was nobody that was talking about anything else but heartbreak and competition with other women. And I think for me, I feel like we need that. We need voices, but rather than just having female voices, we need women talking about their experiences and giving value and voice to that. And that's something that I've been able to connect with young women about.
Fantastic. And I'm going to ask my last two questions together. So I'm working on a project called The Rhythm of Change. So I'd love to hear from each of you, but what does that mean to you? What does the rhythm of change mean to you as musicians, as activists, as change agents? And the other thing I'd love to hear some reflections on is if you had to think of the most important lesson you have learned from your journey as a collective and getting to where you are today and really using your passion for these issues and your passion for music to hopefully create some change, what would be that most important lesson? And I would love to hear from all of you.
This is Hector. I recently was reflecting upon sort of this same question with Leah and David, and I think one of the most important ones for me that I'm still, it's a constant struggle, is the movement is only as healthy as you are, right? So if you're not eating right, the movement ain't eating right. If you're not taking care of yourself, the movement is not taking care of itself, right? So I think that's one of the most important things, and also the hardest things for me to struggle with as one, as a Chicano, as a person of color, as a musician, and someone trying to create change and hope, you know, in a society that's sometimes hopeless.
And how did you come to learn this?
I've been organizing for over 10 years, and there's a lot of unhealthy people within the movement who are basically burning themselves out, who are not eating well. And these are the folks who basically put their lives on the line to create change, yet aren't creating change at home, you know. And so I think that's also been a really big piece. And one of the hardest things for me has been to change my habits. And, you know, there's this homeboy, the Gorilla Gardener from South LA, and he talks about how in the past South LA used to be a dangerous place to live because of the drive-bys. He said it's changed, and now South LA is dangerous because of the drive-through, right? And, like, that really flipped it on its head that our people are not necessarily dying from violence and from drugs. People are dying from unhealthy habits, not eating right, not taking care of themselves, and it's not their fault, right? Like, we're being given, you know, horrible food that's going to kill us. And so that sort of led me to think about, like, if we really want to impact the movement, we need to take care of ourselves. And ultimately, that's it.
I think that music is a vibrancy and a frequency that's beyond our knowing. And I think the sounds that we make are medicinal in healing because it's beyond our understanding. And it's a universal experience that we can all experience. It's this place of bliss and of great joy. And so I think that is the vehicle of change. It's a place where there are no words or there are no miscommunications or misunderstandings or this side and that side, but it's a place of oneness. And that's what rhythms of change means to me.
Well said. Who's next?
This is Jose again. Somebody had told me a while back that the hardest thing about being in a band is keeping the band together. And so with this group, we end up spending a lot of time together, and there's seven of us, and sometimes it's really hard, you know? We'll spend days together sleeping in close quarters, not a lot of privacy sometimes, not a lot of room to do your own thing. And so there's this need to really, like, kind of take care of each other, and this need to really give each other space and try to understand each other. Sometimes somebody gets frustrated and we just have to roll with it. You know, we have to figure out how to just be cool with each other and still support each other and still provide something for people and to help people, to help ourselves, to just put something positive out there. And so then I think, like, well, we're all people who have these certain skills that we've learned and acquired throughout time. Like, we all went to school, we all went to college, we were all able to dialogue. But that's not the case a lot of the time. And so, like, we have these skills to be able to cope and help each other and walk through together, even if we're upset and mad at each other. But not the whole world doesn't have these skills. And so something that I learned is to be patient with people and to be patient with my own family and to be patient with my own friends when we can't communicate the way we're fortunate enough to be able to communicate as our group. I think it's just a really special thing that I've learned, and I try to put that into place with all the people that I know, all my relations outside of this group.
And Jose, I appreciate that as well, because I think even in many movements, there's this divisiveness that will happen within the movement, and then maybe personal politics get in the way of the bigger picture. So is there a tip or a tool you could offer people to kind of get beyond that and stick to the bigger mission or the bigger goal?
I think David put it to me one time when I was really upset about something. I think, what were the words that you used? Was it bear with it? Is that what you told me? He told me something along those lines of, you know, something happens, just bear with it. And just allow yourself, give yourself space to just kind of calm down a little bit. And then bear with it, move on, move forward. It's hard to do sometimes. It's really hard to do. But you do your best. And you know, usually after a while, you end up coming out on the other side okay. So, I mean, that may sound cliche, but it works.
If I could answer the question of what I've learned through this process of making music, and I think it's not that I've learned it yet, but I'm learning to learn. I think part of it is humility, being humble. It's really, you can get caught up when there's people in the music industry that want to put musicians in a certain kind of slot of fame. And so having the ability to remain humble and understand what your path is in terms of being someone that is able to spread messages with music has been something that we're learning. You know, it's hard to kind of juggle that. But I think with that, I think it's really important to have compassion for yourself, have self-compassion. I'm a person that's very, I'm like very anal and a perfectionist. And so I'm learning, and I've learned that it doesn't always have to cause anger with oneself. Music is something that's foreign to me, and so that I can't grasp it in a way that I can, you know, be the best in my definitions of that is really hard for me. I'm learning to be patient with the people that love me, because they challenge me so that, you know, I can become more enlightened or better within myself. And I think especially in this group, it's true. Yes, it's challenging, but I also feel that they are a family that I've been able to learn and grow with, and that will challenge me because they love me.
Thank you.
With the rhythm of change, what it means to me is there's a lot that we need to change. I mean, and we're talking to really shake the ground that we want to be shaking. We really have to challenge the way that we've been, right? Like Tupac says, you got to change the way you eat. You got to change the way you live. You got to change the way you treat each other. And that speaks volumes to the type of life that we want to do. And so the rhythms of change is really challenging everything that you do everything. And I challenge folks to do that and try to do that. Like I challenge myself to do it on the daily. And controlling your anger is a huge part of that. Like we talk a lot about in the group. And the biggest lesson that I think I've learned is that you can do anything. Anybody can do anything that they want to do, and they should do what they want to do. Like you may have heard, a lot of us didn't play any music 10 years ago, and here we are playing with Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros and Ozo Motley and Lila Downs. And I mean, follow the you and the universe are the same folks, and you just got to really follow the rhythm of the universe and what you want to do, and you can do it. I'm not saying to try to be president of the United States, but you could be the president of anything you want to be. And so I encourage folks to really pay attention to themselves and the way that they want to go, because there's something waiting for you, and we're all trying to find it.
And I'm going to push you just a tiny bit on that, because I do hear a whole bunch of people who make excuses. They say, if I could do anything, I would do this, but. And so how do you get beyond that? What was your first concrete step, if you don't mind me putting you on the spot?
I mean, I think everyone has a bottom, right? Everybody's got a bottom. And the bottom doesn't necessarily mean you're on the streets homeless. The bottom could be an emotional bottom. And like, if you hate getting to work every day, like, you got to really make a change. And you know, there's a saying that says you got to quit your job and get to work. And like, it's a painful process to really make that decision, to really jump to the other side of the river when there's no bridge, and for folks to really create the bridge to get them to the other side. Just do what you feel you need to do, and everything, the universe has got your back, I promise you.
And your first step, can I put you on the spot for to be a little bit more personal?
I think my first step, you know, I quit school, I got my financial aid check, and I went traveling. You know, that's something that I needed to do, and my life changed from that moment on, where the world was calling me to different corners of the globe, and I was extremely scared. My mom was pissed. My girlfriend was pissed, but I did it. And, you know, I had to do it for myself. And that's because I really felt strongly about it. And so if folks feel strongly about something, just do it, dude. I mean, I promise you it'll work out.
So in your case, finding your authentic path meant quitting college and traveling. And
yeah, you don't necessarily know. You don't know what your authentic path is. Yeah, you don't know what your authentic path is. Like, that's, I think, is the point. I always thought I wanted to be a professional baseball player. And that's what I imagined my path would be, until I really went to dig a little bit deeper. You find out what it is you really want to do. And that, like, me being a baseball player had a lot to do with now me being a musician. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot. And you don't know which way you're going until you actually get on the road and figure out the direction that you want to take, whatever that is. You know, folks have to figure that way out.
I appreciate it. And I'm hearing from your fellow band member that later you went back to college. And what did you major in?
I got a sociology. I just got my master's in education. And so there's a time and a place, right? Like, if you believe that there's a time for something, there's a time for you to quit, and there's a time for you to start something else. And quitting isn't a bad thing. It's a reshifting. It's a redirection. It's a modification. And that's totally cool.
Yeah, I think that was a really powerful example. I mean, only 30% of Americans actually do go to college. And so in some cases, finding your path might, you can get educated outside of a classroom. Sure. We'll end with you.
Cool. Hi, I'm Daniel. To me, the rhythm of change has a lot to do with questions about what is the current rhythm, right? What is this current rhythm and pace at which the world is going? What is that beat that the world is operating to? And how are we adding beats there? How are we creating like a polyrhythm, right? It's not even about the rhythm of change, it's about rhythms of change. You know, it's about like what the Zapatistas talk about, where creating a world where many worlds fit, right? How do we create all these counter rhythms, you know? So for me, it's like the rhythm of my life, you know? For me, a rhythm of change would be like getting up early, and like on the good days when I get up and exercise and have a good like smoothie that I make at my house, you know, and like I eat natural food and like water my garden and you know, try to create content and stories and music and video and plays and relate to people in good ways, you know. So I think, you know, if we're looking at the rhythm of change, rhythms of change at a more global scale, it's about make your own rhythm, you know, make your own beat, play it, you know, don't wait. And you know, if there's a lesson that I've learned along the way with the cafeteras, it's there's so many lessons. One of them I would say is like that there's always great bands that are going to play before you, which is the audio in the background. They're amazing. And you know, if you have a dream, build it. I grew up with my mom working crazy hours for her own business. She's a costume designer, and she makes her own costumes. And so what I learned was like, sometimes if you have a dream, it's like a child. It's like giving birth to a child or raising a child. The sexy part is the sex, but the not always sexy part is going to be like the birthing part, which I can't understand yet, or will I? But also the rearing, you know, and it's the constant attention. It's the sleepless nights. It's the sweat and love that goes into all of that hard work that's going to make something powerful happen, you know? And so I think like if you want to see a field full of corn, ask people how do you make a field full of corn grow, and then do it. It's a lot of work, I guarantee you. It's a lot of love, you know what I'm saying? And what I want to say about that is not just that it's a lot of work, but you gotta keep asking yourself, is this the dream that I want? And if it is, then you're fulfilling your dreams. We have the ability to make our dreams come true. And that is inspiring. You know, what's easy is like, you know, sitting back and watching TV and watching other people's dreams. But what's inspiring, what's worth living and dying for, is what wakes you up in the morning, what gets you up out of your bed to make yourself alive and thus bring the world to an aliveness.
Okay, I do have a follow-up for you, and I have to tell you, as a mother of a 17-month-old, I totally do appreciate your mindfulness of the birthing process, because you're right. Yeah, there's nothing like that.
You're right. You can't understand it.
Yeah, I can't even understand it still.
Wow.
But I want to know, so you talked a lot about your dream. What was the process of you finding your dream? Like, what did your life look like before? I'm presuming from what I'm hearing from you and the passion that you have when you talk about this, that you're living your dream.
Yeah, very much so.
What was your life like before? Before you took up the dream?
So I've been doing community organizing work for like a decade, dancing with sort of creative ways. I've had for like the last decade, like sort of parallel lives where I do like creative work around spoken word or theater or street theater. And then they're like my direct organizing work, which usually doesn't involve like these kind of layers of creativity and creative practices. Although it is creative work, you're thinking creative about how do you build another world. But for me, you know, it was realizing that if I kept working my 60 to 80 hour a week organizing work, paid position, that I was never getting enough time and energy into what I most wanted to do, which was to create music, to tell the stories about what was happening. Because I'm also realizing that, like, you could have a march and you could have a million people come out, like in downtown LA, 2007 or 2006, Immigrant Rights March, and there were a million people who showed up. The news, some of the news stations said that 200,000 people came, right? If you missed the paper that day, you probably didn't hear about it the next day in the English-speaking media, right, for immigrant rights. And so I'm realizing the power of us and the need for us to tell our stories, because if we don't tell our stories, then we cease to exist.
And you're reaching another level of masses, right, through music.
Yeah, and what's fun is, you know, and Hector will say it, like, you know, whether or not you care about our message, if you feel the music, you feel it. You are tuned into a certain set of frequencies and vibrations, and it's just like a physical, visceral thing. And if you feel it, you're like, oh, you'll nod your head, you'll move your body, you know, you'll smile, hopefully. And in that, we have an opening for a conversation. Maybe you'll listen to what we have to say. Maybe you'll send us a note or talk to us at a show or a workshop and be like, yo, you know, we actually had a note. We played at UC Irvine and in SoCal. And this man said, hey, I don't agree with your politics. He's an older Chicano man. He said, I don't agree with what you're saying, but I grew up in the 60s, and like we would say, you guys are groovy. I'll see you at the next show. That's
success.
What I'm talking about. That's success. We're hanging out together. We don't have to all agree, and how boring would that be if we did? So let's get together. Let's dance. Let's have a drink, whether it be kombucha or something otherwise, and let's have a good time and see how in that relationship it becomes a microcosm for the kind of world we want to see outside of us.
That is a beautiful ending note. And are you all sustaining yourselves full-time now as musicians?
Yeah. We're 6 out of 7 have decided to fully engage ourselves in this journey as musicians and artists. And we still got one more to convince.
You're winning over the last one. Any final thoughts? I've totally taken a bunch of your time.
No, but I'll just say that, you know, we're figuring out how to, one, sustain ourselves as musicians in an industry and really a global economic context that is all shifting. Everybody, especially in the U.S., is wondering how they're going to sustain themselves, how they're going to keep that job or get a new job. Julian Gordon, a man in New York City, is calling this the incomes generation, multiple incomes. We're looking at streams of income. So for us, I mean, we're here at NCORE, and we're definitely hoping to build and enhance our work and amplify it by working with colleges and campuses. And that's also like it's a economic thing. We're also like looking for support for the kind of work that we're doing. And so it's a moving target, and we're taking notes all the time and trying to figure out how can we do what we love and still pay the rent.
This is for real the last thing. I would be remiss not to ask this question. You're at NCORE. Why is it significant for your group to be here at the National Conference on Race and Ethnicity?
I think for us at Las Cafeteras, we come from a universalist and internationalist perspective. So coming to this conference as musicians with that sort of worldview, it's really important for us to really come here and share our work as not only as anti-racist work, but anti-oppression work. And I think for us, we really need to start building bridges with other struggles. And so what better place to do this than at a space and place where people are talking about change within academia, but also how to manifest that in the neighborhoods and build those bridges. And for us, we really want to talk about how the way we're going to eliminate racism, right, is by building a solidarity movement, right? And so, because I know a lot of folks who are for immigrant rights who are not down for queer rights. I know folks who are down for black rights, and they ain't down, you know, for, I would say, you know, Latino rights, right, or immigration reform. So once we start building those connections and understand where we are more in line, more than difference, you're going to see a new world. And we want to be part of that soundtrack, and we want to be part of that movement. We're not here to entertain you. You know, we're not here to entertain the movement. We're here to be part of the movement and struggle with you, right? In the same way we want you to struggle with us.
And the name of your album is?
It's Time.
And it comes out or is out now already?
Yeah. Our album is out now. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Bandcamp. You can find it on our website, lascafeteras.com. We have a Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, because just like the right wing is organized, the left needs to also be organized and technologically advanced. And so we're on all those mediums where you can find us. And, you know, we feel that, you know, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. I'm a G.
From your perspective, the most pressing issue from a social justice standpoint would be?
Right now, the most pressing thing right now is to build a solidarity movement to move forward immigration reform, universal health care, and fully funded education would be the priorities right now for this country.
Thank you so much.